Hello and welcome to episode 42 of the Back to Front show. My name is Keir, and as always, joined from Wells. No, wait. Cheltenham? Yes.
Indeed.
Brew and Bake, or wherever you are today. My colleague, Mr. Kieran Masterton. How are you, Kieran?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm very well. We were chatting earlier, and you were joined by hail in the background.
Yes, thankfully the hail has subsided, and it's balmy sunshine.
It is strange, isn't it? I mean, let's be very British for the next 28 minutes and talk about the
weather.
Why not?
But
it has been rather odd. You know, one doesn't know what to wear.
No,
it isn't. Do you are you a sort of umbrella carrying individual?
No, you should know that by now, Keir.
Well, I know you wear the you've got the cap.
You ever seen me deploy an umbrella in your life?
I think I have.
No.
Yeah, umbrella deploy.
No, never.
Really?
No, unless umbrellas are new technology I'm not familiar with.
You can get some good ones now. I mean, you know, they start very cheap.
The ones, yes, that, obviously.
And then, you know, this kind of semi-automatic ones that kind of protract themselves up and, you know, sort themselves out afterwards.
Better gadget ones.
Yeah, definitely. Nice.
Are you an umbrella man?
I am. I do go through a few umbrellas a year. I bought, I invested all of £12 in a, I wouldn't say it was a golfing umbrella. Those are pretty darn big. Mm-hmm. I do like the ones that you can put in your bag, you see. But then...
You like a bag, I've when heard.
Yes, true. We could talk more about that. Yeah. Yeah, the ones that go in your bag. The bigger ones I tend to lose or leave, or, you know, they sort of get left in a coffee shop somewhere. Never, yeah. It's not easy living in the Southwest.
It's not easy. But it's a constant struggle of umbrella wrangling.
Indeed. Anyway, I'm joined by the recycling crew. They're outside the office.
Nice.
So if we hear some choice local language, you'll know why. It's not me. But anyway, this is episode 42, and I think we're going to call it the Gavin Ballard special.
Are we?
We are.
Nice.
Long-time listener. I think he's listened to all of the shows. Very talented chap who we both know.
We do, yes.
He's almost like inner circle.
He is.
He's
part of the collective.
He's part of the collective. If we had stickers or pin badges, he'd definitely be receiving one.
Yeah, he would, yeah.
Do you think we should do that?
No.
No?
No.
I mean, imagine going into
love
a coffee
a bit
shop.
Of swag, to be fair. Well, so maybe
is it,
we should.
Is it schwag or swag?
Well, I say schwag.
How do you spell that?
S-C-H-W-A-G.
Interesting. I mean, if you Google that, what'd you get?
Perhaps I shouldn't be pronouncing it in such a way. Schwag. Products given away free, typically for promotional purposes.
Schwag.
No, also, cannabis, typically of low grade.
No.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Well, not me.
This has taken a turn for the worst. So, yeah, I mean, no wonder it, you know, raised a funny look when I was like, are we going to start dealing in some schwag? But yeah, Gavin Ballard. Gavin, I mean, yes. Don't call him Gavlar, though. I made that mistake.
He's not a big fan of the Gavlar.
No, I was taken down. Taken down. He gave me a look.
Did he?
Have you ever? Yeah, it's not good. No. But Gavin is a good friend of ours.
He wouldn't have ever given me a look.
Well, I thought, surely you've done the old Skype video chat.
Have we?
No, he's not one for it, actually. I do insist on it.
We're typically audio types.
Audio files.
Yeah. It's a bit, talking of that, it's always a bit, you're never sure quite whether to, when you instigate a call, whether to go full video.
I know.
Or just to step it back a bit.
Yeah, and then like start on the audio and then go, oh, look, video. It is a bit weird. I mean, do you insist on it? It's strange for that first call.
I think insisting on it is wrong.
I often say, you know, video, audio. And then you think, when they go, oh, just audio, you think, oh, right, what's going on?
Right, what's going on your end?
What's happening? This is going to be an unprofessional call.
What is the etiquette around that? And also, you know, you don't want to say no when someone says video, do you?
But, you know, maybe you've not
you
got
do
your
a
best
tidy.
Yeah, you've not got your best cap on. I mean, I have calls here in the home office.
Do you?
Not the home office, my home office. And this the other day, I think I had three decapitated Barbies on the table behind me. It was like a massacre. And you sort of, the problem is, I don't really look behind me until I'm on the call and then the front-facing camera looks behind at the table and you suddenly realise you've got three decapitated Barbies, a skateboard, a helmet, three water bottles, some colouring pens and God knows what else.
Yeah, I realised the other day that I was on a Skype call with video and the fridge was behind me because obviously I'm highly professional and work in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And that we've got all our Instagram photos as magnets.
Ah.
So all I could see was this sort of tile of pictures of the dog.
What, and babyface Kieran, you know?
Yeah, that kind of stuff behind my head. It was very disconcerting.
Yeah,
other thing that's weird on Skype, right, is what if one of you's got audio on and the other one's on video?
And you don't realise. And it's just one way. Do you turn the video off?
Yeah, or do you say, oh, excuse me, mate, your video's on?
Or what you can do, if it is you, I'll often say, oh, I'm just turning off video for bandwidth.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm turning off video because we seem to be breaking up a bit here. Yeah, oh, it's fine my end.
Oh, it's always fine the other end, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's ever really done much. There's surely a Medium publication on it.
There must be, yeah.
If not, we should start
initiating Skype calls.
Yeah, I think things Hangouts. I mean, it's video.
I don't do Hangouts.
Yes, you're not really into those, are you?
If anyone says about Google Hangouts, I just go, should we just Skype?
Yeah,
maybe it might be my age. I don't know.
Yeah, stuck in your ways. Anyways, what have you been up to?
I've been up to a lot of work.
Hmm.
Baby stuff.
Baby stuff. Oh, coffee mornings.
Well, I'm not involved in the coffee mornings.
Coffee and cake.
Coffee mornings happening at our house do tend to disrupt the recording schedule.
I know this to be true.
Yes. Yeah. What else? Yeah. I mean, just lots of bits and bobs, really. What about you?
Well, I was had the privilege of hanging out with our, how do you say? Titular? Gavin, I don't know, whatever.
Hanging out with Gavin, yeah?
Yeah, Gavin in the US last week. We were over there for the
Globetrotting.
Generate Conf, which was very good. And
Gavin, cocktails consumed?
Maybe.
Yeah.
One or two. We had a really good night at General Assembly, which was, mm-hmm. did an event there and then headed off to the Generate Conf.
Nice.
At New World Stages, which was good. But I mean, honestly, some very sad news.
What's that?
There is, or was, and this is the sad news, an amazing diner. You know I love a diner.
You do. We both love a diner, actually.
We do. I don't think we've ever, actually, if we've ever been in the States together. We've not,
no,
have we?
Never.
We'll have to remedy this.
Yes,
sir. You know, you can't beat some brown food. My favourite diner, introduced to me years ago by some colleagues, called the Market Diner, I think it's on 11th, or was, is no more.
No.
Literally, we turned the corner, we'd met up, a few of us go there in the morning, and I'm walking down, I'm like, this doesn't look right. There's a lot of construction. And you know that feeling where you're thinking, no, it's going to be fine, it's all right, this is good, it's going to come right. And then you get further down the street, and then you realise that the plot where the diner was is also part of the construction.
No.
And you stand there and you're looking and you go, this can't be right. But I remember that building with the big flag on it. And then, you know, your friend who's got data, he's American, he looks it up and he's like, closed November 2015.
Oh my God.
So I open up this rabbit warren of articles. It turns out Sinatra used to go there. It was his favorite diner. And there was this whole history and a big ceremony of it closed. Oh, it's just, oh. So we ended up going to some, like, you know, hipster joint where we had a flat white and some rustic bread with
horrendous,
you know, harissa omelette or something. I mean, which is nice, but it's just not a diner.
My favourite diner in New York, which I believe is still open, is Square Diner. Do you know where that is?
That must be the other diner in New York. There can't be any
other. The only other one, yeah.
Okay, where's that then?
This is in Tribeca.
Tribeca?
Tribeca?
No, Tribeca?
Tribeca. It's on Lennon Street and West Broadway.
You just reeled that off. I mean, surely you've just Googled it.
I have, yeah. Just checking. Good.
Yeah, yeah. Because I didn't hear the keys go, you see?
No, you see.
Very stealth.
Subtle.
Yeah. What did you have? What did you eat there?
Well, I always have, you know, the same thing I always have. I have sausage.
Yeah.
Scrambled eggs and pancakes.
A big stack.
Yeah.
Did you put the maple syrup with the sausage in there?
Yeah.
Utility coffee?
Always.
And a juice?
No.
Oh.
A water, obviously, because it's requirement.
Well, they just come with the water, don't they?
Well, actually, the coffee's pretty much just a requirement.
Yeah.
Compulsory coffee? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Coffee's all around. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we found a new one.
Did you?
It was good, but you know.
But you know, not the same.
Not the same.
Did it have plastic seats?
It did have booths, yeah. It did have booths. That's good. The thing about the market down there was it was just a little bit out of the sort of main thoroughfares. And so you kind of had to know it was there to go.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, sad day.
I like the oldie worldie diners, like not ones that are fake oldie worldie, but ones that are real.
Here's the thing: did they get to like 1960 and just say, you know what, we're never going to upgrade this look. Everyone loves it, and just stay with that 50s aesthetic.
Yeah, I wonder at what point it became cool to be retro, and at what point they were just scuzzy.
Because the ones you like are the ones that never progressed. They were built in 1956, and they just never
upgraded. Formica tables, silver edges.
Yeah, like a good British greasy spoon.
Yeah, exactly.
The sort where you could put your coffee down and, like, there's so much fat ingrained into the wooden top that 2 minutes later it's kind of like you've just got to tear it off and then the coffee goes everywhere because the fat has molded to the bottom of your mug.
This is the best web industry podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Going.
Anyway, enough.
Are we ever going to talk about the web?
We are, yeah. So I found something. I thought of you when I found this website.
Oh, really?
Well, I know you love a little bit of stock photography. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's my favourite.
You do. You do. And I think there is a lack in this industry of truly representative photography of kind of, you know, the way we live today.
Mm.
Would you agree?
I would say that, yes. I would say, well, certainly the way I live today.
Yeah. You know, sitting there on the throne, as it were, checking your phone, looking at Tinder, that kind of stuff. But thankfully, modstock.co, couldn't afford the .com, clearly, have come to the rescue. I thoroughly implore anyone who's looking for a piece of stock photography or video, for that matter, to check it out.
Yeah, they've got video. I was looking at that.
You know, if you want to do that whole full-width, full-screen kind of background revolving video.
It's very in.
Yeah. Is it still in, actually?
I think so.
I didn't see the memo that it's not. So
I think it's still in, yeah. I think wood grain backgrounds are definitely out.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're definitely out.
Huh.
And the other fad I was talking about the other day was aqua buttons. Do you remember them?
Ooh.
Yeah.
They were all the rage for you.
They're definitely out, just to clarify.
They are?
But yeah. But possibly, if you've had them since they were in, they might now be cool in a hipster, ironic kind of way.
Yeah, but then, yeah. I don't know. I miss the memos. I never know. Until someone tells me, I'm not really sure what to do.
Is flat design still in here?
I thought it's material. Is it material?
Material.
I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, this site, I think it should become the go-to for all your stock photography needs. So, for example, we have in the modern romance section, or should I say collection, yeah, it's if you need something to go with the, which I believe is something that the people under a certain age of mine, that is, use the Netflix and chill.
Yes.
Which I believe is kind of couples watching, I don't know, movies or something. There's a
yes, indeed.
There's a full screen page you can use for that. There's what's this one? Man looks for love on Tinder from his toilet seat. I mean, perfectly apt. I mean, I don't think we should go down that route of discussing whether it's appropriate to use technology while in the bathroom.
No, I don't think that's not a show topic. That's unlike most things.
Yeah. There's a great one about modern dating here. It's titled Uninterested Date Participant Text Friend Regarding Current Date's Lameness. I think that's
the first world problems one is quite funny, isn't it?
This is also true. Let me just
The one of the man trying to stick a CD into his MacBook Pro.
Very, very good. Yeah, that's very good. Yes. Irritated woman exclaims, "What the f?" I can't swear. It's a family show. Amid unexplained Uber surge. That's a good one. But the my favourite on that screen is the onlookers avoid crazy-looking woman who's actually just taking a call on her Apple Watch.
Have you seen that?
I have.
In reality, I've never seen anyone do it.
Do you know the spookiest thing? So Michael Jordan, a friend of mine, the real Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
from Blue Egg over in The Diff, aka Indeed. Cardiff. He has an Apple Watch, and I was having lunch with him a few months ago, and I said, "Well, what's the deal?" He says, "It's utterly useless. Looks good, utterly useless." He says, "It's got one great feature," and I was like, "What's that?" So he opens up his iPhone and he starts just moving it around, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, look at my watch." And so apparently, it can stream your camera direct to your watch, so you can be like, you know, it's. I mean, that's like kind of spy device. I mean, that could get you in a lot of trouble, couldn't it?
It could, surely it could, yeah.
Which I'm sure is what Michael intended.
You see, we're now sounding more like grandparents discuss modern technology.
I know. Have you heard? It just moves so fast.
You can stream from your phone to your watch.
I tell you who wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah.
Gavin Ballard.
No, he wouldn't.
No. He would be all over this. Bleeding edge.
There's nothing he doesn't know about Shopify either.
No, he's
an expert. I can literally ask him any question about Shopify and he'll come back to me with an answer.
Well, he's my go-to, if I'm honest.
It's like Mr. Memory.
Mr. Memory. No, I liken him. Again, it's a bit of an oblique reference, but I think you'll get it. You know in Police Squad where they had the shoeshine guy?
Yeah.
Where the what's his name? Drebin? What was he called? Drebin. The Leslie Nielsen character would go Drebin, up and...
Isn't it with
the
V?
Was it Vevin?
I don't know.
Vevin? Drevin. He would go up and he'd say, "What's the word on the street?" And the shoeshine guy would kind of like, you know, be shining his shoe and tell him who's, you know, where the criminal was. And then he'd leave. And then you'd see a surgeon come on. He says, "I've got a problem with so-and-so." He says, "Oh, yeah, down the left ventricle," you know, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's Gavin with Shopify.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Everyone's like not doing their job. They're just going via Gavin.
I keep telling him he should come and work for us, but he wants to do his thing. But
I respect that.
Yeah, I'll give him a couple of years.
You can't employ all the talented people on the web, Keir.
Why not? I've not employed you.
That's true. Well, that would suggest that I was talented.
Yeah, we can try. But anyways, modstock.co if you want a laugh. Now, what's that other one? Is it Vazoo? Have you seen that?
Yeah, we've talked about that before.
Oh, there was a good one recently. There was a very, very funny one. Vazoom. Is that it? No, that's not it. That's a completely different thing. But I'll put it in the show notes because there was something I watched the other day. It just, honestly, it was hilarious. Very, very funny. They seem to... I don't know why they're doing it either. I think they just do it for fun. I mean, imagine
There's no financial gain.
Imagine doing a video series for
something
fun.
Something for fun.
I know. Anyways, but... wow, what meaty topics are we discussing this week?
We're talking about coding at 40.
Which
I can't comment on personally.
Well, nor can I, because I've given up coding. So why on earth did you choose this topic?
Well, only because it has lots of my friends and people on the interwebs have been talking about this article.
Yeah. So, it's a Medium post.
Yeah, obviously.
Yes. Do you think this... I mean, talking of Medium, I'll be honest, I have embraced it a lot. I think some of the new additions to how you can sort of style up your publications are actually really nice. And there's a lot of things happening there. I think I got a lot of respect for them when we saw one of their product leads talk at CanvasConf last year. And you can tell that a lot of thought is going into how that they are helping with discovery and that kind of stuff. And their tech stack was rather insane. It was very, very impressive. Do you remember?
It was amazing, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really pretty impressive.
And the fact that that guy had only been there about 6 months could explain it all, and he wasn't even a tech lead, I think.
He's product, wasn't he?
Yeah, product. So he just kept adding more and more sort of sectors of this tech diagram, and it's just like,
yeah, it kept getting bigger and bigger.
Mind blown, as I think
indeed
the kids say. But anyway, so it's on Medium. It's by a 40 plus developer.
I'll let you say his name.
Why?
Because I would struggle to pronounce it.
What do you? Well, you're the, you know.
I'm not the linguist amongst us.
Adrian, what's hard about that?
Yeah, okay, let's call him Adrian. And Adrian, a coder at 40.
AK, it's Koz Mczuski. I apologize profusely if Adrian, if you ever listen to this, which undoubtedly you won't. It's a 19-minute read. And it really is a 19-minute read, which is why which is why I only took 6 to skim it. So again, apologies, Adrian. But why don't you summarise the talking points, Kieran?
So essentially, what he does here is he lays out what it's like having been in the web since the beginning.
I did get excited by seeing that Excite page.
Yes, I did as well.
No, that's just terrible. I actually said I got excited about seeing
by Excite.
Oh, dear. Because I thought it was the Alta Vista, whatever it's called.
I thought it was Lycos. Remember that?
Oh, Lycos.com. Yeah, I think I had an email address with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he basically talks about his career and what it's like being a developer at 40 and the reality of, you know, what a jobbing develop, what it is to be a jobbing developer as opposed to, you know, a heads down developer as opposed to someone maybe higher up the management stack, as it were. He talks about his first job, and then he lays down some sort of rules that he would, you know, some knowledge bombs that he would drop.
Knowledge bomb.
For budding developers or developers that are new to development, I guess.
What's that expression they say? If you know, what would you tell the young Kieran Masterton or whatever? What's that phrase people say?
Oh, like what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, he basically says just some tips to reach the glorious age of 40 as a happy software developer. Now, you know, part of me thinks that reading some of this, the article felt a bit jaded, actually, which is ironic, because he's saying it's how to remain happy as a developer. And there have been a few little points in this that I've had discussions with people, but I'll go through the rules that he lays down, because they're the most interesting bit of the article, I think. First one's forget the hype. Which is essentially saying, you know, in 1997, it was Cobra and RUP, and then it was SOAP and XML in 2000.
Well, I loved SOAP.
And then it was 2003, it was model-driven architecture and software factories, and then in 2006 it was semantic web, and then in 2009 it was augmented reality, and then in 2012 big data, and in 2015 virtual reality bots?
Yeah.
So, you know, basically what he's saying here is that there's always going to be, you know, the next cool, amazing thing, but it's better just to don't worry about the hype and keep doing your thing, keep learning what you're learning, pay attention to what's happening and have a genuine interest in what's happening, but don't necessarily go, oh my goodness, I have to be a Ruby developer tomorrow, or I have to be a big data consultant tomorrow, whatever. I'm sorry, there's some chatter in the background. I don't know if you can pick it up on the mic.
Absolute
choose
shocker.
Your galaxy wisely is number 2.
Mm.
And what he means by galaxy, I guess, is he means niche or little group of people on the web. So, you know, he was saying that examples of galaxies are .NET or Node.js or PHP or Emacs. I guess Ruby would be another one, Rubyists.
Yeah.
And he talks about, you know, the difference in these galaxies and people becoming religions. And, you know, the Microsoft Galaxy, the Apple Galaxy, you know, people, you know, choose them carefully because they can become very bitter and twisted and all that stuff. So that was his next tip. Learn about software history is tip number 3.
That's an interesting one, that.
Yeah, I think so. Because I think that knowing where your industry's come from is as important as knowing where it's going.
I agree with that. I think I have a friend of mine was someone I know has become a very well-known photographer, and a mutual friend said, oh, he's just a very good student of the history of photography. And I think, and you can see it with something like that, or painting, or graphic art, or graphic design. I think someone tweeted recently about they put 4 logos up on Twitter and they all look very familiar to us, but they're all actually from the 70s and they've all kind of, you know, been replicated. And I think this is the point here. It's, you know, he references the Kirby, what was his name? The guy who did Everything is a Remix. And everything is a remix. But to know where things have come from, the history of a language or why a certain, I mean, you don't have to, it's only if you're necessarily inquisitive, but I think, knowing where these things come from, and sort of history of a language, you know, why is PHP called PHP, or you know, things like that, and why it grew and why it has its eccentricities in certain, you know, earlier versions and things like that.
I think it's also important from a point of view of that, you know, as the web grows and develops, you know, unlike maybe 20 years ago when you know, the workforce was all a certain age, there's developers who've been around now and specifically in the web space I'm talking about, obviously people have been coding for a lot longer than that, but in the web space who've been coding for 20 years or whatever now, and for new people to come in and to assume that all that stuff is old rubbish and that the latest stuff's the cool stuff, and other people have seen those cycles before, I think it only aids your integration into teams, etc., if you understand a bit of the history of what's happened with those languages, etc.
Definitely agree. Yeah, number four, he goes on to talk about keep on learning, and I think that's just good advice for anyone.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, always keep, you know, trying to improve your knowledge, etc., is, you know, standard piece of advice, really. But I think that, you know, there is a tendency, and I've worked with developers who just want to do their thing and don't want to learn anything new, and, you know, they're quite comfortable. But I think that's, you know, not possible in our world these days.
Five is teach, and I think this is a really interesting one. I think as you do get older, and I lump myself into his age bracket more than yours, I think it's actually very gratifying to be able to teach and sort of share. And I think this isn't necessarily formal teaching in front of a cohort of students, but it can be just through sharing your experiences online through articles or tutorials or you know, workshops, or just with colleagues. You know, I think you can always learn something from everyone, and I think never be surprised how much you can actually teach someone, even if you don't think your skills are necessarily that you know, devastatingly hot or good or whatever.
It's interesting, he says in there, help a younger developer becoming their mentor. Do not do this before the age of 30, though. That's it. I would disagree with that, actually, because I think that people under the age of 30 have knowledge and experience to impart. You know, so yeah.
You could have been coding for, you know, 15 years by 30. I think that's a bit of an arbitrary number.
Yes, exactly. I think it's more about experience. Don't do this until you're experienced in a particular field.
Yeah. Know your worth is the next one. What do you think about that bit?
I think this is, hang on, is it?
Oh, is it?
No, workplaces suck is the next bit.
Oh, teach. yes, number six, workplaces suck. There you go.
yeah, so workplaces suck. I'd agree with this entirely.
So this was the big crux of the conversation that we were having when we were talking about this the other day with a mutual friend, sort of saying that there's no career path for developers.
Yeah, I think he gets onto that later on, but
he says here, do not expect software corporations to offer any kind of career path. Yeah,
and he also says that do not take a job just for money. I'd agree with that entirely, but then the thing about don't expect your the software companies to offer a career path, I think, isn't necessarily true. I think that software companies do offer career paths. I just don't think they're as structured, maybe, as, say, you know, big organizations like, I don't know, the NHS would be, for example.
I think these, just on the money front, I think there comes a point where you often have to take jobs for money, where your skills, if they're going to be remunerated at a certain level because of your situation, and maybe if you're closer to 40, you may well have, you know, financial requirements, a family that you need to support. I'm not even necessarily saying that you want to go out and buy the flash cars. Life is expensive, and as the older you get and the more responsibilities, quote unquote, you have, it's often you do need to take things for the money, or you realize that the job that they want to pay you for might not be your ideal job, but it's going to give you that remuneration that you kind of require. So it's that's a very hard one, and I think that's not unique to the web or development industry. I think that's just life in general. But yes, the career.
I think there is a point there about not taking work just for the money, because what he's saying is that, you know, that software companies are typically just very highly paid sweatshops in terms of programming, and that's another point that your friend of mine, John Matthews, made to me when we were talking about this, was that he feels that, you know, that the companies typically just want to get every ounce of programming out of a developer, because that's in how the developer makes. So they're not interested in their career development, and I think that in some companies is true, but I think that there are companies out there who do offer career paths.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly work for one that does. You can, I think we've talked about this before, maybe not on the show, but you know, there are two paths that you can take, and the remuneration is, there's no impediment on either side. You can either be a lead, which means that you start to build a team out under you, and you achieve your kind of work wins through your team. That's one route. And it may be that you started off as a developer, you become a development lead, and then you're doing less development, more team building and helping and mentoring and coaching and just sort of generally achieving the goals through your team as opposed to yourself. The other is what's known as an individual contributor. So you can rise up in seniority, remuneration, everything, but you are actually at the code face or the design face or whatever it is, and you're contributing that way. You can still mentor and you can still coach, but you don't have a team with under you, and you're actually still doing the work that probably got you into that company in the first instance.
Yeah.
So I think that's so dependent on the company. Maybe
it's about how you contribute, I guess, isn't it?
That said, I think maybe this is my experience is maybe more unique at the moment. I think also, and this is something we touched on, it's how far can you go if you want to be, and this is not meant to, it's more of a question and not as a statement. You know, if you are a heads down coder, as we affectionately term it, if you don't put your head above the cubicle and you know, shout and make noise and, you know, get involved in different levels of projects, how do you do that? I don't know. I think
if you are that kind of developer, and that's what you do, and that's how you operate in your job, and you're very effective, and you get work done, and you ship, as they say, as the kids say, then, you know, I think that you do possibly end up in this category of person that is just, they see the value in you as being that you produce code, raw material, whatever you want to look at it. And it is a bit more of like that digital factory worker approach. And it's not meant to disparage it at all, but it's, I think he says it in this article, I think you do end up in that position where you, you know, just producing code day in, day out with your head down, that's where the company will see the value in you.
Mm. I think, you know, it's also about the person above you in if, you know, if it's a hierarchical structure, if they've come from a similar background, they will be able to spot that kind of creativity in the code or the way that you approach your work. But if you end up in a team maybe where the person that you kind of feed in up the line to hasn't got that background, hasn't got that appreciation, then maybe that's a problem. I would imagine what he's saying here is mostly true.
One thing I would challenge in this, sorry, go on.
No, it's okay.
I was going to say, one thing I would challenge in this particular section is he says disobey authority. It's one of his final tips in this section. And basically saying it's not worth working for a bad company, just disobey what they say and disobey and move on. I don't always think that's the best advice, personally.
I think move on is good advice.
Yeah, move on is good advice.
He says, do not let a bad job kill your enthusiasm. We've all been there. We've all had a job that has done that for coding or for design or whatever it is. I'm not quite sure what he means by disobey, if he means in the truest sense of the word, like go against what you've been asked to do and then move on.
He starts this section by saying, you know, whenever an HR manager tells you, blah, blah, you must do this, whatever, because we pay your salary.
He refuses to comply with that order. Yeah, I mean, I think we probably feel a little bit differently on that. Workplaces are strange for the most part. And I think for companies that maybe aren't as forward thinking or progressive, then that's probably true. But again, I think it's all down to the unique experience that you have. It's interesting that he talks about open spaces are a cancer, which is pretty strong terminology. I think, I mean, obviously this huge amount of work goes into thinking around what an office should look like or how it functions and the different functions it should have in terms of space layout and Mm-hmm. That's
he quotes a tweet here, doesn't he? Where he says, "Open offices result." So myth: open offices result in massive collaboration. Reality: two people loudly collaborate. 30 must wear headphones to get any work done. Yeah. I'm not sure that's true either.
I think it depends. I mean, I know that there are certain people like the guys from Stack Overflow. Joel Spolsky wrote a great piece where he said every developer he employs has their own office. I'm not sure if that's still the case. It used to be. Mm-hmm. And I think I read an interesting article by the guys from Campaign Monitor, the email tool, and they went big on every developer having their own office, their own space with a door, fundamentally. And because that's how developers work.
I think that's wonderful if you can do it.
Yes, exactly.
But the reality is that a lot of companies that you work for won't be able to do it. You know, they'll be renting space, or they'll be using whatever space that they can find. And I've always felt that developers that say they require silence to work aren't that easy to work with sometimes. But that's my experience.
Mm, right. Know your worth is the next point. What do you think about that one?
Know your worth. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's difficult because I think the overinflation of people's opinion of themselves is a tricky one to say without being
well. I think we come from controversial. The point of view that we don't think much of ourselves. So anyone that does is abnormal.
Yeah, I think that's a very British trait as well.
I think so.
But yeah, I think what he's essentially saying is important. You know, you have to understand what value you bring to a team, to the company as a whole, all that stuff. I think that a lot of people overvalue themselves, is my personal opinion.
I mean, do you think that your remuneration should be linked to the value that you create within a company? So let's say...
I think that's hard to quantify, isn't it? That's the problem. Just like we talked about a moment ago with Shopify and, you know, what they and how people contribute to a project or contribute to a company. I think it's not always a simple thing to quantify, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with someone who had a line, during a round of redundancy, so you're not revenue generating, so you're not essential to the plan. And it's like, well, it wasn't necessarily directed at me, but it's like, well, you can't say that one role generates all the revenue, ergo the other role isn't important. It's not a direct link. You know, it's all part of the chain. Is your salesperson the revenue generator, or is the developer the revenue generator? Because you can't have one without the other, type thing.
Well, both is the answer.
Both, yeah. So he talks here about, the value that you bring, is it, well, let me find it. That means that, if someone's getting paid, say, 100, but they're bringing 1 million to the table because of their value. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting one. You know, how do you work out your worth? How do you work out what, I think a lot of that's dictated by the industry and rates of pay and things like that.
One of the interesting ones here, though, that he says about is the more you talk about your salary, the more the less inequality will engender. So, you know, if we share what we're earning, the more likely the company is to implement equal pay structures. And obviously, for a long time, traditionally, companies didn't let you or didn't want you to discuss your pay.
Yeah,
for that very reason. And I'm not sure how I feel about this. I feel, you know, both ways. As someone who's employed people and paid them and all that stuff, as someone who's been employed, I feel, you know, I can see the benefits of both of these. But I know some people feel very strongly that they should be open about what they earn.
Yeah,
for that very reason. But equally, you know, people who are very uncomfortable talking about money in general. So
I think that's pretty common. It's not just a British trait, which I don't think we never talk about it, but I think, you know, it's common in the States and Canada and Australia and these other kind of societies that we know people from. But I do like number 8. Number 8 really struck a chord. Send the elevator down, or the lift down, shall we say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, take this, you know, beware of your actions and their effect. Do not blush or be embarrassed for changing your opinion. Say I'm sorry when required. Listen, do not be a hotshot. Have integrity and self-respect. I think this, mm-hmm. this, do you think this is a kind of, you meet the people on, the people you meet, you know, as you go up, you know, it's a slippery pole, you'll come back down. So be good to everyone on the way type thing. Or what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's partly that. And it's also partly about developers in particular, traditionally had this, knowledge hoarding tendency. And that goes back to his teach point earlier on.
Yeah.
I think as well, you know, there's this thing of that, you know, my job is safe as long as I hoard as much knowledge as possible. And I think that's kind of, you know, that's leaving the industry to a certain extent. But that touches on this as well, I think, a little bit, which is like, you know, share information, you know, be good to people, be intentional. That's, he says that somewhere, doesn't he? Take conscious decisions in your life. Be aware of your actions and their effect.
Mm.
You know, don't just, you know, act from gut instinct. You know, think about how this impacts the people around you.
Yeah.
I think it's the thing that, you know, that no one can criticize that. There's an interesting tweet he references here. From David Winterbottom, it says desirable developer skills, ability to ignore new tools and technologies, 2, taste for simplicity, 3, good code deletion skills, and 4, humility. I think that's spot on, really.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite funny. Number 9, I'm a bit lost on. Is this some kind of new language? What is this? LLVM?
It's low-level virtual machine, isn't it?
Ah, there you go. I knew you'd know.
But I don't know enough about this kind of stuff because I'm not a techie anymore.
It feels a bit weird that he's put this in, because all the other ones could be read in sort of maybe 10 years and still be applicable, but this feels like it's of the moment, maybe.
I think possibly. Yeah, you're right. But I think that what he's saying is that this is the underlying technology that all these things are using.
Ah, right.
So stop looking to the latest fad, you know, stop looking to the latest fashion, the thing that it's dressed up as, and learn about, you know, the basis for everything.
No, that makes sense.
So I think maybe it's worded a little bit incorrectly in that, you know, LLVM is currently, you know, what everything's working in. But I think that what he's trying to say here is that, you know, look beyond that, you know, guise of the flashy suit that the thing's wearing, and look beyond it and look at what's underneath it. And that's the
I guess
you learn all you can about it.
Yeah, I guess this is, you know, in the web side of things, I think with frameworks, and when they went through all fads, at the end of the day most of them were pushing out HTML, CSS, you know, JavaScript, whatever. I guess it's maybe don't focus on the process, because ultimately the output is very, very similar. And yeah, it's more about, you know, we're still all essentially outputting HTML, CSS, JavaScript. How we do it has changed. You know, the old joke someone said recently, used to be able to open up a text editor and write some HTML and push it via FTP, unsecured, your favorite, to a website. Yeah. And now it takes me 15 minutes to get my dev environment set up to do the same thing.
Yeah, well, 15 minutes is quick.
That's it. Not for Gavin.
No, not for Gavin, no.
He's a gulp master.
Yeah, indeed.
Follow your gut.
It's kind of different to what he was saying above.
I know.
About maintaining, you know, thoughtfulness in your work. But I think that, I guess this is more personal to him, isn't it? He's saying here that he had a feeling about .NET. He had a feeling about the iPhone, even though other people told him it was rubbish. And I guess I remember that. I remember working for Future Publishing and everybody saying the iPad was a joke and thinking, actually, I think this is something.
It's definitely something, whether it's turned out to fulfill the role that maybe Apple or we thought it would, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I mean, it's great for watching pirated TV in bed, but
I think it's the difference was, as everybody said, in the case of the iPad anyway, everybody said this device isn't needed, there's no space for this device in the market, you know, it doesn't fit anywhere. And obviously Apple have proved that wrong, haven't they?
Well, Apple seem to make their own space,
yes, exactly,
and then people come into the wake. But oh, share price dropped, didn't it?
Not the share.
Their revenue.
Their revenue didn't increase.
Oh, semantics. Interesting.
Yeah, the $233 billion in their bank account should see them all right for a while.
That's a big deposit.
It is. the final one. No, it's not the final one. That's wrong.
No, it is. Sorry. Follow your gut. APIs are king. Oh, no. Yes. No. Yeah, APIs are king. What do you think about that?
So APIs are king. Yeah, I agree with that. And there's nothing negative to say there.
I think APIs have proved...
You know, do not vent your own security protocols. It just sums it up, really, doesn't it?
It's something I've talked about a lot recently, probably with you as other people, but it's kind of like I'm more interested in the end result now and than the journey to get to that end result. I see the end result not as a signing off point, but as a beginning point, particularly in relation to what I do now and Shopify and sort of commerce stores and things like that. It's getting to the point of where the store is live and people can actually then alter their sort of business that way is a really exciting part, I think, and watching people do that. It used to be the other way around. The process was the reward, and then kind of you gave the site away and off you went. But I think APIs just give you, it's that kind of a black box mentality. If you're okay with not knowing how every nut and bolt works, but you send a request and you get something back and you can integrate all these different services. It's that the mashup of all these different services where the really interesting stuff happens and people are doing amazing things with APIs, just joining these different services together and creating businesses off them, which, you know, it's not without its problems. But
I think this also, you know, this advice, you know, is valid within, you know, organizations as well in terms of building service-based infrastructure, not building everything as one monolithic structure, but building lots of little services that talk to each other, because then, you know, things become reusable and things, you can take parts out of things and replace them, and you can switch payment providers or whatever, you know, the particular thing might be with far more ease.
Yeah.
You know, push as much logic down to the API, he says, you know, like, you know, just, I think having things as services and as APIs are far more, is a far more maintainable structure than this constant cycle of new developer or new technical lead or new architect or whatever we want to call it comes along and wants to reinvent everything. Whereas if you started with this service-based architecture, you can say, okay, well, we need to switch this out because it's getting a bit old and clunky or whatever, or this isn't really coping, but we don't have to reimagine the whole application from the ground up.
Yeah, no, I agree. Is this the last one? Fight complexity?
Yes, it is.
Fight complexity. Yeah. He's got a brilliant picture of a British intersection with six roundabouts and 38 arrows. I sent someone, one of my colleagues, Mac, a picture of Spaghetti Junction in Birmingham. And he was literally like, what is that? I'm like, yeah, someone designed that.
Yeah. No one knows what that is. It's
the
truth.
It's the worst thing ever. Literally, if you get in the wrong lane, you end up in, I don't know, Dudley or something when you actually wanted to go towards Nottingham. It's a real pain. So simple is better. Always remember the KISS principle. Not only at the UI level, but all the way down until the deepest layers of your code. I think that's something very easy to say, harder to do, but definitely worth it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's a tendency for us to always want to make things more complicated and to think, you know, overthink things.
I think,
I think it's a very important thing to remember while building anything.
So, I mean, this it is a good read. It is long.
It's long.
I think it was probably the notes from a talk that the slides relate to at the bottom. What made you think he was a little bit jaded?
I just felt that some of the stuff about, you know, don't expect software companies to support your career, and the, you know, fight authority and that kind of stuff felt a little bit jaded. I guess when I just was reading his text made me feel that he was a bit jaded with it all. But then maybe that's more about my attitude towards the tech industry than it is anything else. But I just felt that, you know, especially the stuff that we talked about at length about the, you know, career development stuff, felt like he felt he hadn't been given the opportunity to further his career. But perhaps I'm wrong.
I don't think you're wrong. I think you could certainly interpret that way. it was almost like you have to make your own luck in that respect, wasn't it? No one's, but it's, yeah. I mean, that's a whole other conversation.
It is, yeah.
But I mean, what are the, I mean, when you think of kind of web-centric agencies, it's like junior developer, developer, senior developer slash lead developer. And I think maybe what he's saying is there is a ceiling in terms of where you can get to if you are quote unquote a developer. But I mean, I see very many parallels with the kind of things we've both done. I mean, I worked at the NHS. I started off doing coding and fixing printers and sort of worked way up. We had a little team. But if you wanted to go any further, then it was ICT. but if you wanted to go any further, you had to move away from what the role that brought you into that organization, i.e. working with technology or using technology to build things or integrate things, and you became a manager. And mm-hmm. and if you wanted to go higher up, you had to move further away from your work, if you will, or your calling, or your, you know, the job that you really, really enjoy and you know, thrive in. So
I think the real criticism here is about the formal career progression, about, you know, training and, you know, having that review with your manager that says, you know, hi Kieran, you know, we noticed you produce really good code, but, you know, what do you think about becoming, you know, a senior developer and then maybe, you know, a software architect or whatever, you know, whatever their structure is within the company. I think, you know, what he's saying is that doesn't really exist, and no one helps you progress your career for you. Which is perhaps true, but, you know, I've never seen career progression in that way. I've never seen, you know, it as someone else's responsibility to, you know, provide a structure for me, as it were.
I think it comes from...
I've certainly decided to leave organizations because there's nowhere for me to go.
Yeah, I think if it comes from the top down, though, if, you know, if the person you're reporting to hasn't got that support from the person above them, and they haven't got the support from the CTO, and they haven't got the support from the CEO, it's just going to be the company culture, and maybe... You know, there's a lot of stress with deadlines or revenue goals and things like that, that it goes out of the window. I do think you need a very progressive, forward thinking, someone who values the people a lot, and for that to become the company ethos.
A more intentional company, like we just talked about.
Otherwise, it's not going to be top of mind for you to make sure that you're, you know, you're going to have the person who's 6 months into the role, but's really good, you know, chomping at your heels for your, you know, job or whatever. So I think, but I do think the job of someone who is a lead or a manager really is to bring those people up ultimately so that they will leave your team. But you, especially with young developers, I remember working with a lot, it's like you almost felt, if I can keep this person for 2-3 years and they go away feeling really good about what they've done and see me as someone who's helped them leave and get better, they will look back and think that person helped me on my way. And, you know, they'll give you more even in the short term, I think. But
I think there's also an element here of, and you know, if I was writing this article, I think, you know, one of the pieces of advice I might give is that, you know, you've got to realize that you're part of a company that needs to make money. And this comes back to the whole, like, know your value thing that he was talking about. You know, I feel that you need to go into these roles thinking, you know, what difference can I make here? Like, what is my, what of my skills can I utilize to improve X, Y, or Z within the business, with the ultimate goal that, you know, the business is going to make more money because the business pays my pay packet. I think maybe that's forgotten a lot of the time. And I feel inadvertently, if you do that, if you're proactive and you try and solve problems for people. I mean, that's an easy way of putting it, because developers like to solve problems. So if you try and solve problems within teams and within companies for people, I think that's when you get noticed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's very easy, especially when you're joining a company and you get paid at the end of it. And, you know, it might be a 10-person company, 5-person company. You get your pay packet, however it comes. It used to be a brown envelope, not anymore. you may be a bit idealist on a lot of things, that the person, the other people, you know, their main focus is driving revenue. They've got to keep that business alive. Whether, you know, for most agencies, that's really hard these days and things like that. So I think in smaller organizations, maybe it's harder for the management to focus on things like growth and career path. And I've met a lot of young developers who don't get the connection between the work that they do and the revenue that's brought in, or the revenue required to keep that company moving forward.
Absolutely. And obviously that is born out of those developers having their mind on other things, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, they are focused on ensuring that their applications work and stay up and all that stuff. And that's great, because that is an important part of making the company money. But it's also important to realize that is, you know, that there are decisions often made because, you know, it's about making the company profitable, not because it's about...
not because they want to produce bad code or not ship or do this.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Or building stuff in the most ideal manner possible.
Yeah. No. It's we've had a long conversation about it. It's a very long article. It's definitely worth having a look, even if you're under the age of 40.
I think actually it's for people under the age of 40, in the sense that it's meant to be, you know, giving back some knowledge from someone who's been there.
Yeah. He's obviously been coding for 20 years, all different levels. He talks as well.
He's also self-taught, which is interesting.
Self-taught and has done some startups, burnt out, been fired, been, you know, accelerated through companies. This is a good read. Lots of food for thought there, I think, definitely. And it's interesting from what you were saying, what John was saying, and, you know, the conversations we've had. But if nothing else, it will take you back, that first shot of the Excite homepage with all those little buttons at the bottom. They're kind of like what was that when we did which episode was it where we had all the grey, what was that logo generator where you could get all the different, where your site, your startup.
Yeah.
Those were the badges back in 1996, whenever it was.
They were, yeah. Lycos. It
works in Excite. Works in Netscape Navigator 4.
Yeah.
Netscape Navigator Gold. Do you remember that?
If nothing else, reading his The World in 1997 bit is great. Talking about WinNuke.
Do you remember, I think technology dates, like, certain films you watch and they don't look dated necessarily with the fashion or anything, but then they'll bring out a Nokia communicator with a huge aerial and it flips up and it's got the daintiest keyboard in there, full QWERTY with every other option available. It's like 4 inches by two. It's funny watching things like the original Mission Impossible, which was, I think, released in 96, and kind of a modern film in terms of the action sequences and everything, but the technology just looks so old. It's so funny how it dates. But
the minute you see a beige PC,
I know
it dates it, or a beige Mac for that matter. That really dates it.
I know. Yeah. Oh, anyways, but definitely check that out. We'll put that in the show notes as always. We have gone on a long time. Do you think this makes up for the interlude? I'm not calling it a hiatus anymore. I think that's disparaging. This is our fourth episode of the year.
Yeah.
That's one a month on average.
It's only May, whatever it is. And actually, no, it's April still.
It's April still, but we've already done 400% more than last year.
Indeed.
So, and it's all thanks to people like Gavin for listening.
Yeah. Thank you, Gavin.
Gavin, you are a true listener. We very much appreciate it. If you would like a show dedicated to you for no other reason than we enjoy it, you know, please.
Yeah, we don't charge for it.
It's a free service. It's just altruistic. We just like...
Just tweet us and we'll dedicate a show to you.
We like giving back. I mean, over the years, we've done HRH Craig in Wales. He's probably had a show dedicated to him. Wigo, I mean, not formally, but, you know, Wigo's probably had a show dedicated to him.
Kinnish has had probably a year dedicated to him.
The Kinnish, well, yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say we've ever dedicated anything to Neil.
No.
But
just referenced his love of an IO domain.
Yeah, he is the master of the Indian Ocean, and yeah, I know. I think Neil, if you're listening, we're not going to dedicate a show to you. No,
harsh.
I think he's had enough coverage. He's had enough press.
Yeah,
he's had enough press from us to last him a lifetime, or at least his next three startups, anyway. But yeah. But as always, we thank you. If you've got this far, I think you've been brave. And, you know, if we had a pin badge, we'd be sending you one. I think we should do pin badges. Sean's logo's good. We should do that. But
yeah, we should.
I'll add it to the...
And a tote bag.
Of course. Yeah, we could do that as well. I might have some insight there. But as always, thank you for listening. If you do like it and you're in that iTunes thing, give us a review.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
If you don't like us, don't.
Yeah. If it's only say good stuff, 5 stars or nothing.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
I mean, what's the point of giving 4?
You've got nothing good to say.
Don't say it.
Yeah.
And on that note, you should read Oliver Lindberg's intro in the latest issue of NetMag. Very, very good. So go to your newsstand, buy it, and listen to what he says. But we have actually hit the hour mark. Wow. It's like almost a two-parter. Could splice it, just stop it in the middle, and then we'd have episode 43.
Two for the price of one.
But if you have been listening, and if you do have any feedback, you can find us on the Twitter, apparently.
We check
that, don't we? And we shall be back. No promises when. That's how professional we are. And you go off to tend to your baby and your coffee mornings, and I've got some work to do. But it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers.